Then I will hand over to honorable members to introduce themselves so that when you finish the department, we'll introduce themselves, because I think it is critical that we know who is in the house so that when we start indicting, we're able to know that's why she's doing this or he's doing this, because he is having this particular portfolio. Honorable Marcus, can you please introduce you so that not for the purpose of the record as well as for the purpose of people knowing whom they are indicting with.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Honorable Hope Malchas, and I'm the whip for the ANC portion within the Social Development Committee, appointed to Social Development as well. Thank you.
Can you please set it down now? We will do that. We are going to be given a copy. Can you please, ma'am, check so that you are assisted? Because we have not even introduced to you. How can we give you documents when we don't know who you are? Please sit and then introduce yourself, and then we'll be able then to give you necessary documents. And if there are special ones, you will come. Thank you. Can you
start again, ma'am, because I was interrupted.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm Hope Malchas, the work of Social Development. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bev Abrams. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm from Gauteng province. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and everyone. My name is Masaba Soledi. I'm the member of this portfolio committee from the Free State. It's my birthday today, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bridget Masango, member of the committee, coming from Gauteng.
Thank you, Chairperson. Lindy Wilson, member of the portfolio committee from Limpopo.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mavilo, can you introduce yourself as well as Mama Soti?
Sanibonani nonke endlini. Igama lami nginguPrimrose Sonti, ngingumama walapha kule committee. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, good morning. Patrick Mabila, member of this committee.
You found ourselves at a stage when we were saying meanwhile documents are being distributed. Let's utilize that time to introduce ourselves, and then with the honorable members having finished to do that, I allow the department to do the same. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, honorable members. My name is Zain Dango. I'm the Director General of the Department of Social Development.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I'm Zodwa Mvulani, the project lead for this process.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, my name is Tolosan Makwaza. I'm the CEO of SASSA.
Honorable Chair, good morning, members. My name is Lumuka Oliphant. I'm the head of communications for the Department of Social Development. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Raphahla Ramogopa. I'm the executive manager for strategy in the Department of Social Development.
But let also me take this opportunity to say we've got a new DG. You remember that we have been talking about filling the post for the priority critical post in the department. Today we have Mr. Zain. He is now the DG. Can we put our hands together, really? And we congratulate the department. This is a very good milestone. And also we have the CEO of SASSA. You remember, honorable members, that's has been another problem where we are not having, after the former CEO's term had ended, can we now say we've got Mr. Magwaza? Okay, for now, those will be, they are also very important for the engagement we are going to be in today. But this doesn't mean that other members, all members will introduce themselves and we will be a little bit faster. Can you then continue, sir?
Chairperson, members, good morning. My name is Brenton van Frieda. I'm responsible for social security in the Department of Social Development.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Paseka Letsatsi, Head of Communications.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Osborne Masilela. I'm the head of the DG's office. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Zakeriwe Chauke. I am the Chief Financial Officer within SASA.
Good morning, honorable member. Pardon my voice. My name is Abraham Mashango. I'm the Chief Information Officer at SASA.
I apologize to those guests who wanted to participate before they were known in the house. If there's no order, I'm going to follow, but all members will introduce themselves in order to also assist the secretary to be able to capture everything. So whoever is a guest from this side, all the way to this side, can you start?
Good morning, Molin. My name is Ayanda Khonsi. I am an ANC researcher.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Craig McKeown. I'm a journalist with Amabungani.
We don't even see you. If you could stand up and then introduce yourself. Thank you. Next. Yes.
Hi, I'm Bianca Capizorio from the Sunday Times.
Okay. Yes, sir?
Oh. Hi there, my name is Paul Herman from News 24.
Okay.
Morning, Marion Tam, Daily Maverick.
Oh, okay.
good morning, my name is Lukanyo Chalato from the SABC.
Yes, ma'am?
I'm Susan Seeger, I'm a researcher at the BA.
Okay.
Morning, I'm Alice Steen from Media 24.
Come again?
Alice Steen from Media 24.
Oh, Media 24. Okay. You, ma'am?
Me?
Yes, in that room, not unless there's someone I can't see you.
Yeah, morning, I'm Dennis, I'm with the New Age.
Okay.
Yes, Linda Ensor, Business Day, thank you.
Okay.
And Crotty Financial Mail.
Hi, I'm Isley Philander from the Black Sash.
Oh, where you coming from, ma'am? I know I have heard the Black Sash, but it didn't say where you come from.
Where a Black Sash, Western Cape.
Oh no, the lady this side.
Oh.
Yes.
Sorry, Financial Mail.
Financial Mail. Yeah, it didn't say where he's coming from. Okay.
I'm Erin Torkelson. I'm also from the Black Sash.
Good morning, Wissal Jaffe, SE Corp.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Wissal Jaffe from SE Corp.
Good morning, my name is Jane Diala from PMG.
We've got a researcher too from Parliament.
Good morning, my name is Siavuya Kutulakoyan. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Thank you very much. You are very welcome. Your number is so big that you can outnumber us as committee members. Okay. Now that we've done those logistics, any hand there?
Yeah. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ian Bo, SASA head office.
Oh, thank you so much. We really need SASA full time today. Ours is going to be a formal arrangement. We have done this in order to save our time, but it is at this time that this committee is formally opened, and we starting to do our work in a very informal way. I will then, it's declared open. The secretary is going to assist us with technical support in terms of understanding who is not here, is there any apology, and then the business of the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, all of the members and departmental officials and the stakeholders. I have a couple of apologies. One is from the Deputy Minister, who is unable to be with us today. She's presenting the white paper on disabilities in a meeting. Another one is from Honorable Dudley. She's also attending another meeting, but she will join us later on, as well as Honorable Fanda Merve. She has a couple of meetings to attend prior to our meeting, but she will join us later on. We have our two standing apologies from Honorable Mokhotsi and Honorable Dikok. So those apologies I've received, ma'am, and recorded. Thank you.
Can I propose to adopt the apology, because
Honorable Dikok has done so?
Thank you, Chairperson. I propose adoption of the agenda as read. Thank you.
Thank you. Any second in adopting the our agenda? Thank you so much. We now in order, we can go ahead. Today we don't have much items. The major item today is briefing by SASSA on the progress made on implementing the Constitutional Court ruling on the bidding of the new social assistance payment tender and preparation for institutionalization of the grant payment. So that is all we are about today. The department, social development, because we must know the roles of these two departments. We have the Director General, because SASSA is an agency that is implementing a major program for the department. But we must also know that they are an agency, which means they have that ability to do their operational work, but when it comes to policy matters, they then have to actually consult and work with the Department of Social Development. That's why the DG is here, as the CEO is here, and they are going to give us this briefing. And I know that the members, if there are members who have not been part of the committee, we will actually assist them by giving them another additional document which will give them a background to this project. But court process, why institutionalization, what has been happening. So I think the department can start giving us that brief. It is upon you, CEO of SASSA and DG, to decide which member of your team, ours, is going to be provide you with space and time so you can do your work. We will always just intervene when there's need for that, but please be on the platform and give us a... Okay, honorable member.
Thank you, Chair, and I'm grateful that this is at last happening. However, we have one concern. Normally, at least 2 days prior, at least 24 hours prior to any meeting, we have a copy of documents that are going to be used in this meeting forwarded to us, so we've got time to go through the documentation and to prepare for a meeting in advance. We've only been given this documentation today, which makes life very difficult when we want to prepare for a meeting. Please, what is the reason for this?
Okay, I also wouldn't mind allocating time for you members to have a look. But I don't want to speak for the department. The department will give us a reason why we didn't get documents. Can I do that? But hopefully, So it's up to you. If you want minutes to read the paper, that will be afforded. Because at least we started 3 in the house today. But let's give the department an opportunity to give us an explanation, probably an apology if there is. They should wait a little. We will give you documents or members from the media, but please can you not pressurize on us on that. We will provide that. Thank you. I know the ball is in your court. Can you give the media communication, because these are your documents. Please give the media. Find a copy for each member that requires that. Oh, okay.
Excuse me, Chair. Can we ask the officials to make more copies made for members, and we did not know that the media was going to be here today.
And don't say there's a little bit of noise down there. Okay. Okay, don't say we forced you to give out if you thought there were matters that are legally, it's on your court. It's up to you how to manage that.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members, and thank you for the welcome as DG. I think at this stage it's a very interesting time to take over as DG. So thank you. In terms of the documentation, Chair, we need to apologize for the late submission of the presentation to the people participating in the meetings, particularly the Honorable members. We know that this issue has been one that people have been awaiting for a long time. And in terms of distribution of the PowerPoint presentation, there's no problem because there's no legality within the PowerPoint presentation issues. Part of the reason we did not distribute documents is there were elements that may have been quite sensitive relating to possible contracting out. But I think we'll make that clear in terms of the presentation. I think that the late presentation we need to apologize for, and I think that we in many ways we should have made sure that documentation should have been here at least 2 days before, and we take responsibility for that. Chair, I think it's important also to outline the role of social development and the role of SASSA, or do we do that later?
Before you do that, can you assure me that the media is going to get these documents? Please do that, because that's one of their rights. Honorable Wilson?
Thank you very much. Obviously, it's very frustrating when we don't have documents in advance to prepare ourselves. But in light of that, Chair, you did say you would give us time to recess now to go through the documents. May I propose that we continue with the presentation, but we may well ask for that recess right after the presentation, if that is in order, so that we can discuss matters amongst ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to come to the first point that when the DG was saying the documents would not be distributed, I wanted to come on the issue. But he was saying not distributed or not given out on the issue that once the meeting is an open meeting like this, each and every person has gotten access to a document. We can't say, I've seen the document, it's written confidential. I don't understand why it's written confidential, yet it's a presentation that is made for everybody to see. Because if it was a closed session for the members of parliament only, it's declared that it's a closed session. But for this one, let each and every person get a copy. I understand they might have not had a lot of copies now because they didn't know that we are going to have a lot of audience like we are having. The other issue that I want to come to, Chairperson, yes, it's wrong that we didn't get the documents on time. We have been saying this for quite some time, and they know that they are supposed to give us the document, because I don't understand really, if they give us the documents today, how do they expect us to perform our oversight on the document? Because we are performing the oversight over what they are presenting here, and would not be doing justice to the oversight that we have to do as the members of this portfolio committee once we get documents late. That, Chairperson, we really cannot accept it. It's not acceptable. We can't accept that we get documents early in the morning. But also to say again, because we don't know how much Honorable Wilson we are going to be engaging with the document. I don't know whether we will need necessarily a recess, but when they are making a presentation, Chairperson, would appeal that members should get a little bit of time to indulge. If maybe people do not understand an issue, through you, Chairperson, can we get an opportunity in that issue to be clarified more as the presentation is being done? Because I don't know, in terms of having a recess to say that we're going to break and caucus or whatever that we'll be doing aside. But if we note whatever that is being presented here, we'll note it. And perhaps if at the end of the day we have not dealt with the document until to our satisfaction as the members, we can then have time again, try to get time to Parliament, because this is a very important information that we need to get. We need to get to the bottom of it. Nothing should be left unattended. Chairperson, thank you.
No, Chair, I think it's fair and proper that I also in terms of the document, we must really say that it must be provided in advance. But maybe we say that it should be for the last time that we come to a portfolio committee, we don't have documents. So that's the contribution that I wanted to make, supporting Honorable President.
Honorable Wilson? Malkas, I'm sorry. Mama Abrams, after you, ma'am. I think we should be very open in this meeting, because in my understanding, it is the first time that we are receiving a document late from the department. Because every week we receive it 2 days before the time. So I just want to put that rider on, that people sitting here, the newspapers, know that it is the first time that we're receiving a document late from the Social Development Department. Thank you.
Mama Abrams? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Hope has covered me with the documentation received over. Thank you.
I also think I must clarify the fact that there is this perception that this report is not, that there's no political will to come forward with the report. So this being the reason why the issue of having received the documents late might contribute to the fact that it is assumed that there's no political will for this report to be presented. I'm happy then that you're giving us members, honorable members, the opportunity for us to really know that the report is here, is going to be presented. And if in any way, like in any other engagement and discussion we have had before, we always make arrangement that if we didn't finish, if there are matters still outstanding, another meeting is always convened, as long as there's a need to do that. And I'm still confident that we will be able to do that. If there is something that is not clear, if there's something that has not been covered, there is information that is not available, it is going to be given time to be brought to this forum. So I think we are at a stage now where you should be addressing us and noting that it is a serious concern that members have not received this particular department, information, adding to the perceptions that are already out there in the public domain. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And again, once again, apologies from the side of the department about the late submission of the documentation. We do understand that it's not acceptable. Chair, in terms of the department is responsible for the grant administration, the constitutional mandate in terms of transferring monies to households. Colloquially, that is called the big money. That means the actual money that reaches beneficiaries comes through the department, which we then give to SASSA, which is an agency, to administer on our behalf. So we are equally concerned when there may be any impediment of getting that transfers to households. SASSA is an agency, and under the SASSA Act, they are responsible to pay the grant. But nonetheless, given our role as the custodians of the big money, we have to work with them on this. Our guidance to SASSA was that, and this is what they will present today, is that they must ensure that grants are paid in April 2017. That this is not, paying of grants is not a strategic issue, it's not a discretionary issue, it's a constitutional duty that we have to pay the grants on time. It's not one of those discretionary strategies, it's something that must happen. And failure to do that is actually failing our constitutional duty. So secondly, so I think the gravity of the issue we have impressed on SASSA. The second issue is that the respect for the law in relation to the contract in question must be followed. So the fact that the current contract was declared invalid is something that we said they must factor into any strategy that they engage with. So the presentation will be done by SASSA, and the CEO will give some introductory comments. But essentially, the beginning part of the presentation will just go through the Constitutional Court and what the legal issues were there. The second part of the presentation would be what is the option that SASSA has chosen to ensure that there's continuation of paying the grants. And I may come at the end just to round up some issues that are emanating from the presentation. Thank you.
And I would want also to assure the members, to give this information that says the CEO is new because the former CEO of SASSA, Dr. Virginia Peters, his term has come to an end, and we now have Mr. Magwaza. And before Mr. Magwaza, there was a period where Ms. Ramakopana, I wanted that name, the actual name. Yes, she was acting. I'm giving this background so that when we ask questions, we are also allow her to answer some of what might have taken place during her time. So you can now see or go on.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you so much for this opportunity for us to come to brief the Portfolio Committee on the state of readiness of us taking over or paying grants with effect from 1st of April 2017. We know for a fact that it has been a concern for so many citizens and the Portfolio Committee members about whether we are ready or not ready about the, on this issue. We will try and show the committee that we are ready to take over on the 1st of April. Though we'll try and show how are we going to be able to do it going forward. We are aware that it is a constitutional obligation for us to be able to pay the grants correctly and on time, and that is something that we will endeavor to do, and it will be done, in fact. And we won't dwell much as how SASSA came into effect, and the reforms that have been taking place within SASSA. It's a common cause that the current contract that we have with our service provider CPS was declared invalid by Constitutional Court, and there were things that we were supposed to have done, and we were in fact instructed by court to report to them on a quarterly basis, which we have done. And I'm not going to dwell much on everything. I'll ask Ms. Rapahle Ramkhupa to take us through on the first portion, which is constitutional obligations that we had with Constitutional Court, and how we finalized that part. Thereafter, I'll ask the project lead, Ms. Mvulani, to take us through on the new way of paying these grants. Without wasting time, can I hand over to Ms. Ramkhupa to take us through on this?
Thank you, members. Good morning, and thank you, CEO. In terms of the Constitutional Court,
can we allow this year for the purpose of this?
Nandimbono tatu makwazo ndivanje upeli voice kosi ya mnaya nshoka na nyewe. Ndivanje voice ka.
Masi zimela ane ndo bana. Ya kitasha ku president wale. Uza umana kwa kumdozo sala apa onga president iyo asu. I take note of that. But this has also voto dolo anajima. Continue.
Okay, continue. Is there anything that is really not comfortable with?
I think in terms of the Constitutional Court, requirement, part of it, after finding that the tender process was unlawful, the Constitution also assumed the supervisory role or responsibility over SASSA by requesting us to report on a regular basis. The first part was that the first initiation report was presented to the Constitutional Court, where we explained the initiation. If you could just give the mic to the members. Thank you.
The first court report that we presented to the Constitutional Court is where we outlined the new tender process that we were going to implement, and the initiation of the process in engagement of how we see the outlook of that process going on. Later on, a second progress report was presented to the court, whereby we gave an overview of the progress in terms of implementation of the tender. And the third report was the one that focused on the tender process, where we indicated that we were unable to award due to some technicalities which we outlined in the report. Subsequent to that, we did a detailed report to the court indicating that in order to look at the second phase of the report, which talked about the institutionalization of the payment process, we outlined the implementation process, how much and what we think need to be done. I'll reflect on some of the commitments just now. But thanks to indicate that after submission of the report in November, on the 25th of November, the Constitutional Court issued an order. In that order, they were discharging their responsibility over SASSA in terms of supervisory role. And that judgment is available. We can circulate it to members. But I'll go back to the report to highlight, to say, what did this report say to the Constitutional Court? One, the...
Chairperson, thank you. I just don't want to make an assumption that when he's saying 25th November is 2016, because now she's not
saying the year, it's very important that she also states the year, because we'll not assume that is it 2016 or is it 2014 or is it 2015, please. The report was in 2015, I apologize. In that report that we submitted, the last report on institutionalization, we made a number of commitments to the court in terms of what we
did. I also request members to also, as the presentation for the purpose of what you are saying, also use their provided documents to.
Okay, continue.
The first commitment that we indicated was the progressive realization or the phase-in approach.
Sorry, Chief. This is one of the issues we have when we don't have documents in advance.
Can you hear me? No, that's better. I just want to, sorry, I'm going back to you, your constitutional court reports, your final court order discharge of the Concord supervisory role. Who was granted the supervisory role and under what conditions?
Excuse me, members. We are making a presentation. There's going to be time for questions. I don't think we should behave the way we do.
Continue on. Continue.
The report to the court highlighted what were the processes that SASA was going to follow.
The processes that SASA was going to follow in terms of institutionalization process. Upon receipt of the report, the Constitutional Court issued a judgment on the 25th of November 2015. In that report, this is how it reads. The Constitutional Court has considered the progress report filed in terms of paragraph 4.1 of this court order. It has concluded that the progress report is in compliance with the court's order and that the supervisory jurisdiction should be discharged. The order, the Constitutional Court's supervisory jurisdiction is discharged. That was the outcome from the Constitutional Court. Thus requiring
just a minute, Mama Tukulisolele.
I think we'll have a confusion because we are looking at the slide at the same time.
Yes.
And what she's presenting, the report and the slide, it's not the same. I think the person who is dealing with the slide really must be in power with her. That's where there's a little bit of a problem.
Thank you very much. Can you be able to can I then give this arrangement that let's take 5 minutes?
By looking into our document, she must rearrange the document and make them to be one document. We're giving you 5 minutes. We also allow members within that 5 minutes to be perusing, especially where she has gone to. Thank you. You read in, okay.
Apologies once more for the confusion in terms of the slides. I think they had mistakenly hidden some of the slides. As I've indicated that a number of reports were submitted to the Constitutional Court, and in the report we constantly gave the Constitutional Court feedback around the progress in terms of what we were doing in the implementation of the new tender. In September 2014, it was discovered that the people that tendered the process, we only received only 3 companies that tendered. Most of the companies that normally have participated in this process withdrew in the last minute and did not submit any responses. They did not submit any bids. Those that submitted were not even responsive in the sense that they did not pass even the administrative assess evaluation criteria. So we had to go back to the court to indicate, while we pursued the process towards appointment of the new company, it was difficult to award, and these are the reasons. And the court was satisfied. Following that, within a period of 2 months, we went back to the court to say, this is the process that we have put in place in order to ensure the institutionalization of the payment process. And when we gave the report, we made commitments on some of the steps and processes that we will follow as the agency to ensure that we achieve the commitment in terms of for institutionalization of the payment process.
in following the submission of our report, that's when the court gave us a final court order that discharged its responsibility, supervisory responsibility over this particular process. And by that, by implication, this meant that as the organization, we were no longer required to submit progress reports. And then when we went back to check progress on the commitments that we have made to the court, which I will highlight now to say what were the commitments that we made to the court. We established that there were a number of areas where we were not meeting the deadlines. And in establishing that we were not meeting the deadlines, we had to go back to our legal counsel to say, can you please advise, this is what we commitment that we have made to the court, and now we have realized that there are dates that we are not meeting. Can you advise what should we do, because the court has already discharged its supervisory responsibility? And we have since received a number of, we got from different people so that we can be fully aware or be so certain that whether we are doing the correct thing. Now we are comfortable from the advice that we have received that we'll be going back to court to advise the court that this is the area where we could not meet the requirements, and these are the area where progress that we have made, and these are the other mechanisms that we have put in place in terms of implementation. I will go to highlight some of the constitutional court commitments that we have made in that report. One, the first thing that we indicated to the court was that the implementation or the institutionalization process will be a phased-in approach. So we will be doing it over a number of years. The second element that we indicated that in order to achieve this, SASSA will have to build certain capacities that it doesn't have currently.
Can you please state that when was that, so that we can follow your sequence, that when was the court process, and then what? When did you set up these tasks, so that at least the timeline we can follow properly?
Thank you very much. As I indicated, the report to court was on the 25th of November, 2011. That's when we got the constitutional court order. And then after that, the first thing that we went back to do was that, before I even go back to the actions that we have taken, I'm just highlighting the commitments that we made in the court report.
Another member is repeating, you're saying 2011. Are you sure?
2015. I said 11 November 2015.
Okay, now we know it's 11 November 2015. Was that are you sure about that timeline? Okay. Let's continue if that's what you are saying. Members will ask questions at a later stage.
November.
Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Did you say first or final? Because final states 25th of November, but she used first. Thank you.
The final court order was on the 25th November 2015. That is the final court order from in response to the report that we submitted. In the court report that we submitted where we were given the discharge, I just wanted to highlight before we go into progress to say what were the commitments that we had made that made the court to give us that discharge. One was that we had made a commitment that it will be a phase-in and that we will build internal capacity both in terms of staffing and in terms of ICT requirements, that we will ensure that the payment information or the payment data will be centralized and also brought into SASSA.
And then we also indicated that in order to achieve this, because this is a responsibility that requires commitments from other critical key stakeholders, some of which we do not have legislative oversight or relations with, we will have to get into partnerships in order to achieve that. Like, for example, SASSA does not have a banking license. So in order to achieve some of the requirements for payment, we would have to get certain agreements or certain provisions by the relevant institutions such as the Reserve Bank. We will also have to get certain commitments from the National Treasury, because if you are building an internal capacity, the National Treasury has been very strict in terms of increasing money for compensation of funds. And then the other thing that we did was that we were also very specific in terms of what were the key deliverables, which were seven. And those deliverables were, one, the integration of systems. The second one was the biometric verification and authentication. The third one was the payment processing by establishing a control account within the institution of SASSA. We also had the issue that we will be looking at the payment infrastructure, whether the option is to acquire or to utilize those that are with partners or what is being required for SASSA internally. We also looked at the option to say, in terms of cash distribution and security, what is feasible and what is not feasible. And then the last part was the issue of the cash card issuance and the special accounts.
With that, I think now I am going to open this part for questions, and so that we don't go a long way and then you come back. I don't know what you were going to say, Honorable Wilson.
I count six, not seven.
Yes, I just want to ask you for seven.
It
will help us if the presenter is actually coming closer to the
Apologies, members, I realized that I excluded the payment reconciliation. Can I ask one of my colleagues to give members the court report, because we do have copies for that.
Sorry, Chair. Chairperson, we are in a world that is using technology. They can also add that so that we are able to see it on the screen. They really necessarily don't need to do a lot of things. Just add that.
So they will be doing that in the process. While they do that, they must continue presenting. But I was asking from members if you wanted other than the number of deliverables. We are now clear that this is what they had committed to the court that they are going to do. We agree that as a new South Africa is going to be sent to your...
I'm not clear.
I'll come back to you. Because I think in the beginning it is said that there was a court judgment, constitutional court judgment. After that, they were given compliance duties to do, which you will note if I'm going, which ended up being this deliverable. In order to meet the court instruction, there were steps to take, including this one. And this one is what they then, after being charged, say they then said, this is what we will do. So they put it in that way.
those highlights of constitutional court commitments. And then they gave us six, now they are seven. Now we want to listen, if you agree with me, how far have they gone in these commitments? Okay, sure. Continue then. We want now to assist us know that having agreed and committed yourself with the court, this is what has happened on number one bullet up until all the bullets. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation in terms of the transition, the payment process now is going to touch on some of these critical elements because it's a smooth process. Some started before, some in the end. So I'll ask my colleague Zoda to take the process forward.
Mama Zoda, Zosha Lagulen, Vanda Waitani at Shu Shule City, Basuka and Alonja. Okay. Address us, Sis Zoda. You are the, when you were introduced, you are the project manager.
I'm the project lead.
Project lead, okay.
Chair and honorable members, can we just, before I give the, where we are in terms of the timelines that are set, if we could go to the this page in the presentation. If you look into the document that was submitted to the court by SASSA, there is a sentence that said all this will be dependent on the consultation. And as we consulted, both with major stakeholders, they then looked into those seven deliverables as we stated them, and they were rearranged in this fashion. So which then, it says, for SASSA to be able to take over and implement the payment model, the first thing that is needed, SASSA needs to look into the new payment infrastructure program in totality and look into the data service integration program, identity and access management program, so which then means number three and number six, it breaks down the number two, which is in the court document. I just want to elaborate this so that when I go back and now talk to the dates, it makes sense. It does it make sense to members?
Okay. One more question. Just for clarity, Chair, what you're telling us is that you changed, there were seven court deliverables. Numbered 1 to 7 was time frames, and that after meeting with stakeholders, you changed those deliverables. Is that what you're saying to us? The order of those deliverables, is that what you're saying to us?
We beefed them up, not necessarily changing them, because if you look at number two in the document to the court, it's the verification and authentication, then in brackets, biometric enrollment of beneficiaries and system users. So now that we were advised, we have to separate it and make it into two programs. But when we wrote to the court, it came up as one, but in brackets, we had those two.
Maybe what we see here is when they were given the instruction, they then went to those people who matter on how this is going to be implemented. And though, because now you've got an instruction, a program to run, but you must come to say how. So this is the how part. If I can say data service integration program, we'll remember that there was that as a deliverable. But now it appears as to it's leading to the streams that will be established in the form of structuring. Who is going to do it now? So can we allow that, Mama Masango? Do we have a clarification question? Okay, we allow her to continue then? Thank you.
Then the fourth one, we were also advised, due to the fact that we are implementing a payment model, what we have to intensify and make sure that we have proper system is the issue of fraud, risk, and cyber assurance program, which was not part of the initial programs that you wanted to do. Then we have the web-enabled platform program, which is still there in the court document. The biometric enrollment program, I've indicated number two and number six, we can look at it as we initially looked at it as one, but we advise we have to separate them. Then number seven, we have to look into the integrated customer care and support program. Then the eighth one is the new improved process program. Then we also look into the alternative pay point program. Then the last one is the supply chain management readiness program. So all these then, it will dictate that how SASSA has to be ready to effect the payment model. So now I'm coming to the deadlines.
Are you still all right, members?
Okay. In terms of the key deliverable, so I have to go back. In terms of the key deliverables, so which then, what I'm saying, honorable members and chair, we have increased them from 7 to that number, which is 11. Or 11 or 10 for now, I'll just unpack it further. But for the first one, the integration system, The deadline that is there in the court document, we have said SASSA will be ready by March, between March and June 2016, we'll be piloting on the system, the web-based system, and then the full rollout implementation to be done in August. Now, those two deadlines, we have not met them as SASSA, but the advice now from as now we were doing the technical and getting the technical expertise as well as the stakeholder when we're talking to stakeholders, we were advised we should start first with the biometric for the ID biometric for staff or system users, because that on its own will be a platform which is a build-up for the SOC pen replacement being the system that you are utilizing. So the system user biometric will also form a basis for us interacting with the Department of Home Affairs in terms of biometric authentication. So, which then I can indicate the terms of reference for the user ID biometric system. They are already with our BAC, and they will be in the tender bulletin or out there in the market on the 9th of December 2016.
In other words, what you're saying is the second deliverable is not delivered either. I just need clarification.
Chairperson, I think we are not going to complete the presentation if we're going to have questions in between. Because The thing is that we are listening, and every time when we are stopped by someone interjecting or want to ask something, then we lose the trend of what is taking place. Because, look here, I wrote my questions down next to what the official of the department is saying.
No, Chair, I fully agree with Honorable Malchas. That is the direction the Chair has given. We are all noting our questions. So when the presentation is complete, then we can be allowed to pose our questions. So I just ask the Honorable Member to note her question and at the right time pose it. But I agree with Honorable Malchas.
And she will actually point the bulletin she was referring to at the time of raising the question. Thank you very much. Continue, Honorable.
Chair, for biometric, then we have two deadlines. There's the system user, which is, like I've indicated, the procurement process, it's already in progress, will be having the system and being utilized by March 2070. Then for the biometric, for beneficiaries, the date then has changed to October 2017, while in the document that you have, it was October 2016. Why October 2017? In terms of the biometrics for beneficiaries, currently SASSA is taking biometrics from a three-month-old baby to an older person. But I want us just to concentrate for those that are the 3 months old and the 14-year-old. Which biometric the Department of Home Affairs for now doesn't have a repository for? Because as and when we apply for birth certificate for babies, they don't take the biometrics. So for SASSA to be able to do the one-too-many search as and when an application process is made for either an infant or a baby, we must do our own biometric one-too-many check so that a kid cannot be, recycled, for a lack of better word, where a baby can apply, I can use a baby to apply in one province and then move to another province. So we need to have those biometric currently that we have taken in as SASSA to house them in our own system. Currently, that has been done, but it was housed in the system of the service provider. So we are in the process of getting such system back in-house, but we don't have enough servers to be able to carry such. So this is work in progress, because as part of our own ICT revamping, we have looked at increasing the storage so that then we are able to look into this. So hence the biometric for beneficiaries, it's going to be delayed a bit. The second issue why it's also delayed, when we interacted with the Department of Home Affairs, currently they are linked with the banks in a form of the web system, where you only use one finger or a thumb to be able to authenticate. But in our case, we take 10 biometrics for each beneficiaries, and when we do an application, we have to verify and do the very program that I've talked about of the one too many of all the fingers. So which then means what we want to do and link up with Home Affairs, when you make an application or when you just present yourself at SASSA, you present an ID, we will take an ID, take your thumb or whatever finger it is, just to authenticate with Home Affairs that yes, you are the owner of the ID that is presented to SASSA. But then
to be able to check as to whether you have not been to SASSA before, then we also have to do the one too many search. If you consider how many applications SASSA is doing on a daily basis, the traffic that will be sending to Home Affairs, they indicated they have their own program that they are running. So they won't be able to do the one too many search during the course of the application process, which then means we have to do the one too many search overnight because of the volume that we'll be sending to the Department of Home Affairs, which then means between us and Home Affairs, we have to intensify the ICT system that is there. So those are the two reasons why the biometric for enrollment for the biometric both authentication and whatever, it has been delayed, but it's work in progress. Then I will come to the payment reconciliation. For the payment reconciliation and the payment processing, these are to do with the control account as well as the type of an account that we want to give to the beneficiary. So this one, because they are all dependent, we had already started discussions with the Reserve Bank. We have had several meetings where in the last workshop they even invited BASA and PASA on this one. But we have indicated to them as stakeholders, what do we mean by payment reconciliation? We wanted real-time reconciliation where we are able to have a view of when a customer or a beneficiary phones SASSA to be able to indicate, yes, you have used your card in ATM B at Bizana Village. Then they have indicated they are still going to check because currently they are not processing what we call real-time reconciliation, but they are, what they can only be able to do for us, it's near real-time reconciliation, which then means we can only get overnight reconciliation. So whatever that happens during the course of the day, we won't be able to have a view of that, but we can only have a view the following day so that then we are able to trace and track. So which then, but we are also not outside the timeline set in terms of that one. Then but also what I can add, Chair, we have the request for information document that we are also going to get it out there to the public. Why the request for information, not the request for proposal, as we have been doing as the norm? We have seen that for the past, the current contract that we have with the service provider and the bid document that we issued in the, which we did not receive so many bids, we thought maybe it's because when we write these documents, we don't have what the industry have outside there. So we wanted to have the request for information and list all the things that we want to have. Then that will guide our process so that when we do the RFP, we do a watertight request for proposal, which is not contestable and which will cover all the aspects. And we will even know that this is not doable. So rather than putting it in the request for proposal, we'll rather then eliminate it because the very companies that would have shown appetite for the request for information will be requested to come and do presentations so that we understand one another. Then in terms of the cash distribution and security, Chair and members, this one, it's also linked to the payment itself. So the RFI, that we are going to get it out there in the market within before we close for or slow down for the festive season, also includes the cash distribution and security thereof, because in the very document we did indicate it is something that we will still be going out for the market for. It's not something that SASSA will want to do on its own. Then the contracting with merchants. It's work in progress. We have already done an analysis of all the merchants that are currently being utilized by the current service provider. We have also looked into what other merchants that we could start to introduce and give it to either the new service provider that will, or the new service provider that will be servicing us, or SASSA directly contracting with such. On this one, we're looking into the issue of small shops and mom and pops supermarkets that are not necessarily chain stores, how we can also start to get them to be part of our merchants in villages, so that the experience that our beneficiaries are getting in their urban areas and semi-urban, those in rural areas must also be able to get such an experience that they need not necessarily wait for money trucks. They can also go and get their payment through merchants and or be able to go and transact in some shops in villages just using their card, so that we also comply and make sure that people don't handle too much cash on their because we know it creates issues of fraud and so forth. Then the last one is on the card issuance and special accounts. It is written there that we will be having consultation. I've already alluded to that fact, Chair, that the consultations have started with the Reserve Bank, and they've invited PASA and BASA. We've also started discussions with Treasury just to look into, firstly, we have to differentiate, because currently when how we do the application process for SASSA, SASSA has the commissioners of oaths, so which then in terms of the FICA regulation that we even do it thorough than some of the payment association members that are doing it. So we are exploring on the fact that can SASSA issue cards while having the backup of banks. So all those are part of the discussions with the major stakeholders. So I've tried to cover all the deadlines that we're supposed to have worked and mapped on. Then, Chen, I will now get into my presentation, if it is allowed to.
Are we okay, members?
Yes.
That we should proceed.
Thank you.
If we can finish the distribution of papers, because we are somehow distracted. Thank you.
Chair and honourable members, the payment model that SASSA wants to bring home, if one could say bringing it home, it's underpinned by objectives that are flowing from the NDP document. The first one, the brief that we got is: make sure that as and when you pay the grants, we revitalize the rural and semi-rural economic activity. By this one, hence, I've said when we look into merchants, we are looking at now including those shops, small shops, and supermarkets that are individually owned, which are not part of the bigger conglomerate? How do we make sure that we bring them also into the national payment system for them to start to play into that market? But while also making sure that our beneficiaries benefit. Then the second one is the empowerment of SMMEs. In this regard, as and when we pay, how as SASSA do we make sure that the money that is paid in whatever village or in whatever township, it grows the SMME enterprise of those areas and create jobs? It might be jobs that only for a few days when as and when we come and pay, but that will also be contributing to the economy. Then the third one, it's to make sure that there's focused spending of social assistance. Currently, we beneficiaries, as and when they get their money, how they use it, yes, it is their money, how they use it. But we should not lose focus of the fact that the social assistance is based on the Constitution, which is underpinned by human rights, which then this money was solely given to alleviate poverty, making sure that our some of our people don't fall through the cracks. So what we intend doing, we are still negotiating with the major stakeholders like your Reserve Bank and PASA, that the card, whether the card or whatever account we are going to have, firstly, the card itself shouldn't transact in areas where we deem they are not suitable. Just for example, your bottle store. So we need to have that discussion as to how we can make sure that this money is focused and for what it was meant for. Also, now, internally for SASSA, SASSA has to make sure that it improves its own compliance, efficient as an organization, and effective in administering both the grant application process and the payment thereof. There's better risk management, security, and fraud, hence the biometric utilization is a must. Then SASSA has also to look into that there is improved customer experience, which is cohesive. Look into the broader payment option available to SASSA and beneficiaries. We are saying we don't want to look into only one option. There should be options and people be given that choice. Then lastly, full SASSA data ownership of both the payment and that of the beneficiaries. The process that we have undergone currently, we have appointed work streams. The work streams have already registered progress. But before they could start, we gave them, they did what we call the due diligence, where they looked into the grant administration, the beneficiary management, how SASSA manages its beneficiaries, and the payment service. So we have already received that document. That I can just highlight two things, Chair, that the due diligence report indicates beneficiary management is very poor, because if you have a look at the current card, the toll-free number that is in the card itself, it's that of the bank. As and when our beneficiaries have an issue with their payment and the grant, they cannot phone SASSA directly. They phone the current service provider, which there is nothing wrong with that, but we are not in a position to monitor the response as to whether are they being responded to within the norms and standards set for the agency by DSD. Then also on the payment services, we all know that one we have outsourced it stock, lock, barrel, in a sense that even the reconciliation, the current service provider only reconciles after a month, not doing the real-time reconciliation. So that report indicates where there are shortcomings in how we're handling our business. So they also then gave us the payment option selection, that this is what is there in the market, so start engaging and talking to it. Then, and also they indicated for their developmental phases, and also for us to be able to introduce any service provider, there should be what we call the phase-in, phase-out process. I've already spoken to this slide that says the SASA readiness. Chair, what I can just highlight for this slide, there's a procurement roadmap that we have already put in place to make sure that all these are done, to make sure that as and when we start to get the payment model in-house, all these processes are there. What I can just highlight and explain, what do we mean by supply chain management readiness program? This time it's not the procurement that we normally know. We are saying if SASA has to have your shops in rural areas, in townships, being given point of sale devices, we have to know, as firstly, they must sign Memorandum of Understanding or SLA with us, but the downtimes of those point of sale devices, we should be able to view them, because it can be nice for SASA to increase its footprint in terms of the payment options, but we don't need to neglect our customers or beneficiary to a sense that as and when the point of sale devices or payment system of one service provider is not working, that information has to be known. So we need to have this program up within the organization itself. Can I skip this one? I'll come back to it, members. The options review. There are two options that I will present to the House. The first one talks to the open architecture, or what is commonly known as the open loop, where you go out there and operate in the national payment system that is provided for by the Reserve Bank. Then the second option looks into a combination of both an open loop and a closed loop system. What option one specify? In fact, both, they specify that we still need to have a SASA account requirement, which we have already done the expression of interest. Then we are also in discussion with the Reserve Bank, PASA and PASA, on the specialized accounts, which has limited facilities. Currently, in the market, there are products like your Mzansi, your student accounts, you name them. But when we had a look at them, they did not cover all aspects that we needed this account to cover. The account that we want to have, it must have no deductions of any sort, loans or whatever. that because the money shouldn't be encumbered. You can encumber it outside this system. The open architecture also means it's a system that is operating in the national payment system. The accounts is fully accessible and allow for direct reconciliation with a transactional account. Biometric is a key factor in both where we want to have our beneficiaries. I can indicate to you, Chair and members, in the current program or payment that we are utilizing, we have been given permission by the Reserve Bank for utilization of biometrics for older people and disabled people. So we are now in discussion that can we extend this to all beneficiaries of social assistance. I've indicated that the why we want to look into the issue of the biometric is the fraud and risk management that is given. But also here, we are implementing what is coming from the Taylor Commission, because when you read the document itself, the biometric were recommended then. So that's why when we got into a relationship, and so far, we have been using the biometric. Then option two, we are looking into a SASSA card that operates in both systems, both the closed and the open loop system. It must also be an integrated system, flexible enough to operate in both and to allow for cash disbursements for beneficiaries in remote areas. I've indicated biometric is key. For both options, the following are required. SASSA has to make sure that it has its own internal ICT system in place. We recruit the relevant capacity. There's phase-in, phase-out transition. What we have done, Chair and members, we have looked into how the payment is being done and made sure that we disintermediate this. We separated each and every aspect that is linked to payment so that it's not lumped into one the way we've been lumping them. We want to be efficient and effective as an organization, so we separated all this into those aspects. We wanted to have a look at the card body, production and distribution. That one, the card should be separated if it is possible. We also want to have a number of service providers to issue, just to do the card production. One of them, we are looking into, can we tap into the government-to-government, which is where our smart IDs are being produced, which is the government printers. But it's just work in progress. On this one, we wanted to have a multi-services in order that if one service provider is not servicing us as they should, we should be able to cut ties but still have the production of cards being done. Then the second issue is that one of the card issuing. And the account management, the card acquiring, the cash distribution, as well as the biometric proof of life. Chair, this doesn't mean one service provider cannot bid for all these. But what we wanted to do is to make sure that our SLA this time is watertight. It addresses each and every aspect and also look into all those aspects that normally under one contract you are bound to miss some of the programs. So hence then we had to disintegrate all the services that are done under payment. I've already spoken to this model, Chair, of the SASSA account management. What are the pros of us getting into the new getting new banking partners? We will need a new bank account. The cash distribution and payment management will be separated from, I think this one, what we did, we look into both the pros and the cons when we look into this option. So on this page, we're just looking at what are the aspects when we introduce new banking partners. So part of what could also be of relevance for us and beneficiaries, we could be able to negotiate pricing, and because it will be a number of banks, we could also look into negotiating a similar cost pricing across the board, but while also giving our beneficiaries the choice. Then the benefits of utilizing the banks, they are there. The only thing that I can add, Chair, into the slide, which we have to look into, is the bullet third from last, which looks into, which says beneficiaries with bank accounts will be allowed to exercise their choice. Let me put a rider on this one. We are saying, should we have relationship with maybe 4, 5, 6 banks, and a beneficiary happens to have an account with Bank B, we are saying we are not barring them to use their account, but such an account must then talk to the policy and regulations of SASSA. Because what is key for us, we want to have what we normally call that special viewing into the account. Then there are the cons or challenges that comes with this option. Firstly, there will be that loss of that economic development opportunities and the flexibility of alternative pay points that we want to introduce. There is that possibility of higher cost being deferred to beneficiaries. When we negotiate with whoever banks are, we will be carrying the transactional fees ourselves as an organization, but we are capping the numbers. And in terms of the research that has been conducted, our beneficiaries, or not necessarily beneficiaries, LSM group, their visit in 1 month to banks, they range between 17 visits to 25 visits. And as an agency, I don't think we are in the position to be able to subsidize all 17 to 25 visits. So there will be a number that you are curbing on. But then the unfortunate part is once we start curbing, then it means the transactional costs and fees will be borne by the beneficiaries themselves. Then the reduced risk and fraud mitigation controls, on our side, we won't be able to. Then what we also have planned to do, which is the strategic insourcing, looking into the account itself, we might find it difficult with the banks. We have not started discussing it with them, but we might find it difficult because having a special view of what is happening in an account, we might be told by the bank that is backing us up that, Sasa, your role starts and ends here. Once the money is in this account, you might not have those special viewing rights that you want. So those are the things that we have to have a look into. And the other challenge, which we had before the introduction of the new service provider, we had a number of banks, as and when beneficiaries passed on, or we have fraudulent accounts, money will sit in those accounts for years and years, as and when we want to get it, either when a beneficiary has passed on, it forms part of the estate, and it stays for years, just for us to be able to recoup and get that money back. So those are the challenges we are looking into, but that doesn't bar us. But also, if we go for this option, the last bullet, where we are saying we wanted to have the limited control for channeling the use of the card, we won't be able to start saying, don't go and you are not going to transact in a bulk of store, because then that will be a card that is managed and managed and acquired by somebody else. Option two, which is the combination of a closed and open loop system. Here, SASSA is considering or has been advised to consider having its own card. That will be linked to a corporate account. And under this corporate account, there will be bank accounts of all the beneficiaries, which will also lead to the new cash distribution and payment pay point management, where we have indicated we want the very card to operate both in the closed and open loop system. So this one then means we are not separating electronic payment and cash payment, because all SASSA clients will be having a card, whether you are paid in a closed loop or in an open loop system. Then, like I've indicated, we'll have what we call the card bureaus. We'll be in charge of that card. Yes, we'll have the bank backing us up, but we'll be able to negotiate the optimal pricing for the card itself, and the card stock will be managed by us and controlled by us. Then SASSA will be having the new acquiring infrastructure in-house as time goes on. I think this one is just a continuation of, if we go for this model, what is it that we are going to be getting? Then, Chair and members, with the two options tabled to the House today, it is still vital that we should have what we call the SE's phase out. I've indicated there's an RFI, which will lead to the request for proposal, which will lead to us getting a new service provider. But then the new service provider has to be given ample time to able to set up and start to issue their own card, which then means there must be that transition that is required. Work which is still in progress, we are doing the final alignment and harmonization with key stakeholders. I've indicated we are in discussion with BASA, and the Reserve Bank. We are trying to align and harmonize. If some of the things that have been recommended to us are not working, and then we discard them. We are also in the process of finalizing the budget and the APP review for this program. we are also gearing ourselves up as an agency in terms of the ICT and the supply chain support that is needed to make sure that when we start procuring, all system go within SASSA itself. Strategic stakeholder communication is also underway. There's human resource and OD consideration that needs to be done as soon as practically possible, but we have started with looking into which key positions will be needed as and when we have to start this, while the organogram itself for the new SASSA will be developed. So we are fixing this car as it goes, ma'am. Then, lastly, what is also a work in progress is the specification and the procurement readiness. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. This has been a long presentation. Can I put to you, honorable members, before you ask your questions, whether I can give 5 minutes break so that can I have 5 minutes break so that you can stretch your legs immediately? That is your side and your protocol is in your hands. Members of the media, we are now going to go again. And when we go again, we're going to try. We know that we have dealt, I hope all of you are here, we have dealt with the historic background. Why did we end up in court? We've actually gone to a situation, what did the court say? And what commitments were made by the department? And finally, we've been given the detail of then how did we put into implementation the court instruction and which stakeholders were to be involved and what did they say? And at the end of the day, when we were implementing what was taken into this whole process and where we are now, this is work in progress. It can't be a project. It's a long program, very long program, and it will go for years, but there will be matters of immediate, matters of long term, and matters of sustainability without any further challenges in the life of our own people. So now, I will just allow, if you agree, the DG to complete a few things, and then all time will be given to portfolio committee and members to interact with the information. So you can ask in any chapter or area where we were dealing with this information. We are at court. Court gives instructions. Instructions are broken down into implementation mode. Thereafter, progress, where are we? And at a later stage, exactly what will happen? Because we are having this assurance that you are sending out. No one will not get their payment when that time comes. The state of readiness, we have seen the challenges of outsourcing. Court has said insource. Then we are in the process of insourcing, but also trying to perfect the system. Now, with the permission of all of us, I give the DG, having listened to your agency and what they presented, what is it that you want to conclude with, and we allow a process of interrogation of what we have been dealing with. I've welcomed the minister amongst us. You are a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The guidance that we've given to SASSA as an agency is that the option, and they've assured us that irrespective of which option they choose, payments will happen on April 2017. And the option that our underlying guidance is that they must choose the option that limits the risk, whether it's legal risk or operational risk, of not paying on April the 1st, 2017. And I think that I just needed to make sure that that comes through from the side of the department.
I identified Hans, Ma Abrams being number one, and number two was Ma Wilson, and Ma Masbongile was number three, and then others will come. Oh, she says, I love you so much. That was it's a mistake. It was Masango as well as Mama Malchas in that arrangement. The floor is yours, madam.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Minister, officials and everybody present. I think it's Mabongi's birthday and that's why you're recognizing her today. Yes, thank you very much for the presentation. It is much appreciated, a lot to be taken in. But we also want to congratulate the DG and the CEO and wish them well on their appointment. And I will ask a few questions and then I'll leave a lot for my colleagues. We've heard about Sasa, Pasa, and Basa. We've heard words today. Beyond all that, I'd like to ask the marketing method. What how would you let it notify all the clients, the Sasa clients? How will they know? Because we've got many out there in our rural areas and so on. What method would be used besides radio and the newspaper? Then, can the department inform the committee what informed the new change, and what will be the impact on service provisions? There's so many questions, Chairperson. There's an assumption that the new in-house payment of social grants by SASA will mean legislation changes. What mechanism are in place to ensure that any of these legislation changes is in line? Since it's going to be in-house, what measures are in place to avoid officials of the agency to be involved in any form of corrupt activities or practices? Regarding to the card assurance and special accounts, what time frame do you have on issuing these cards? We hear about the 1st of April 2017, and how long would it take for each person to have their card? In line with this, I'd also like to ask, will this be an annual card? Will it be a lifetime card? Because to save costs if it's annually, and also if there's any damages to the card, will it then be replaced, and how soon will it be replaced? Also in line with the banking part, the charges where it's in the rural areas, where there's small shops. We've heard about people won't be able to use their cards at bottle stores. Very interesting. It's a pity that there's small shops in the rural areas. So how would you be monitoring that when people actually buy alcohol in shops in Pick and Pay and all these other places that they don't buy alcohol? Did SASA conduct any pilot project to identify any challenges that you may encounter in future? And will there be any key staff use of CPS to utilize for transferring of skills? And what is the time frame on that period? How long will SASA operate in the remote rural areas? And does SASA have the necessary and adequate infrastructure to start operating in these areas? And also the security risk. You've mentioned a lot about the security risk of these little shops. How would you actually, what provision have you made that besides the money and all that in the rural areas? You mentioned the storage of the data. Increasingly, how would it be, what is the security on that, the data, how would that be secured, that nobody else but SASA has got security into these areas? Also, how would you avoid any other deductions or anything taking place on these cars as in the past? Regarding the authentication and the biometrics, besides using the thumb, what other methods would you use? Because you'll find sometimes where it's not possible to actually use people's thumb and so on. Chairperson, also mention has been made about the withdrawals. What security would be for the people to know that if they can withdraw at the various chosen banks or merchants, that they won't be paying additional fees? Yes, also, I wasn't clear on the one liaising with the bank when there's a problem, perhaps if the client don't receive the money, liaising with the bank and liaising with SASA. Maybe just clarity on that, because as far as everybody, especially the goggles out there, they know SASA and they don't know about any banks. I think I'll pause now so my colleagues could ask a few more questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
You almost finished all the questions. Mama Wilson?
Thank you. I think under the circumstances, I think our colleague Bev asked a lot of questions. Perhaps it might be wise to get answers to those questions first. Otherwise, we're going to end up with a long list of questions first. It's a suggestion, Chair.
But you can include critical ones that were not there, even if they re-impass, so that at least we utilize your time.
Mine are completely different, Chair.
Okay. Or, so can they answer?
I think that would be wise, and then we can go on to the next. Otherwise, they're going to end up with 30, 40 questions, and then it's hard to monitor what's been answered and what hasn't.
All right. You can answer the questions, but I do know those questions are very few, but each one talks to each. But please do that as professionals.
Okay, I understand the suggestion. I don't have a problem with that.
Yes.
But maybe if I can throw two questions.
That is great.
Because I have asked, Honorable Bev has asked four questions.
Yes.
So I want to ask two, then it's six. And then there will be a follow-up on the...
You can get it in your tree, and
just one thing. Let people ask questions, because if it's only four from the Honourable Member next to me, it's two. Then Honourable Wilson can ask, and then we make a second round.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah,
don't let us do a talk piecemeal.
Yeah.
We have agreed that anyone who wants to ask a question can go ahead. Then take.
But
because there's no more other hand, I'm handing over to them to start.
I said I have two, and then no thanks, Honorable Chair, and sorry for that. The whip, I know you've got the privilege of questions.
Okay.
Just on SASA, has the agency asked the service provider the challenges they encountered when they were paying out the social grants for sharing the problem? And if so, what lessons have been drawn from those? Related to that will be, how will the agency deal with those challenges when they take over the payment system? Yes. Okay, those are the two.
See, I'm just being all over the place, and so I came in a bit late, and I may have heard this if I was here, but I didn't. Just in terms of what kind of infrastructure and capacity do we have in the province, throughout the provinces and in rural areas, and you know, how is that going to be dealt with in terms of obviously expanding it and ensuring that it's the right sort of thing without opening us to more sort of issues regarding corruption because of trying to do things in a way that we're not actually set up to do them. And I'm hoping that was covered, but perhaps if we could just touch on that again for me. Thank you very much.
Continuing to answer, coming to ask questions. Okay.
Because this was not clear what the honorable member said.
Okay.
Didn't want to ask. So those who want to ask are asking.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. My first question has to do with the fact that I did not hear in the presentation, at the end of the presentation, where we are with the actual implementation now. I heard the processes that are underway, but I didn't hear what it is that is going to happen. We had the privilege of the presentation of the timelines of the history, starting from when there was when the Constitutional Court gave its supervisory jurisdiction, when it discharged its supervisory jurisdiction after the fourth after the final report that was submitted, on the basis of which the court then say, I discharge my supervisory jurisdiction. And then that was followed by a step-by-step of going through the deliverables, the seven deliverables, and then they were extended to include things that were not there. But when the presentation was on that, it did not say, I didn't hear any of those deliverables having been accomplished or achieved. And that then said to me, if the supervisory jurisdiction was discharged on the basis of the deliverables having been submitted to the court with the timelines, what is that saying to the court for having discharged that supervisory jurisdiction? But also, Chair, the presentation also spoke of the data. It is key that the data belongs to SASSA. So what I would like to know is, who does the data belong to now? Because the presentation, I think twice or thrice, said that it is key for us that the data belongs to SASSA. As we speak now, who does the data belong to? Does it belong to the service provider? Is that what is in the service level agreement? Or what is the status there? And then... also, Chair, because when the question about the non-achievement of the deliverables is being responded to, I would like to know what informed the timelines that were put to the deliverables. I understand the fact that it is said that the there is a line at the end of the report of the court order that says this will depend on consultations. But I'm saying what informed these timelines that we are ending up with timelines that have not been achieved in the most. And so I would like to know how that went ahead. And also, in the options that were put in place, I did not see, and I would like to know if that is being considered, I did not see the post office to be one of the options, because, I mean, SASSA and the post office have a history of having tried to work together, and that has not happened. And we all know that the post office has a footprint throughout the country and things like that. So I would like to know if any of those options actually do include the post office. Thank you, Chair.
Now is the time to answer.
Dabulis. Kakhulu kakhulu nibulisa uminister nabotata nomama bedepartment bulisa nekomiti yam ngokubanzi. Mna ndizoba nemibuzo nje emincane emithathu. Ndibuza ukuthi ingaba usasa kule new program ke uzoba nayo na i-infrastructure eyoneleyo kuwo onke amaphondo, ingakumbi kwi-rural areas ezilalini ezinzulu nasezifama for ukunikisa nge-grants. Okwesibini, usasa yintoni aza kuyenza ukuqinisekisa ukuba wonke umntu uyabhataleka ngeemini zepeyi. Okwesithathu nokokugqibela, ukuba kukho impazamo, ingaba usasa uza kuba nayo i-backup for ukunceda abo bathi batsitywe ngenxa yezi mistakes zithi zenziwe sistaff. Ndiyabonga, Chairperson.
Kodwa is a Xhosa speaker, but however I can say it is about the perfection of the effectiveness of the system in the event that there's no infrastructure in farms and in far-flung rural areas, and how will they be able to protect and ensure that there's no risk, particularly the common mistakes that are caused when a person can't get a grant. Have they learned anything in that regard in order to prevent it so that it does not take place in future? So the ball is in your court. And yes. Oh, Mama Wilson, you are back. Thanks so much. You can have your
Okay, yeah, sorry, there was a bit of confusion there as to whether we were continuing with questions or not. So let me put my questions in now. I want to refer to page 4, the final court order and the discharge of the Concord supervisory role. My understanding is that when there is a discharge of a supervisory role in a constitutional court, that supervisory role is only viable and valid for as long as you are meeting the constitutional court judgment, in other words, the 7 deliverables and their timeframes. My understanding is that once you are no longer delivering, you then no longer have played the supervisory role. This must go back to the court. Can you give me confirmation on that? And who in actual fact is the supervisor? Is it the minister? If you could answer me on that one. Then the 7 deliverables that we discussed. I mean, we've talked about this often. We know what those deliverables are. We understand that you've added some deliverables onto, you've broken it down further. The 7 deliverables that the Constitutional Court gave you, you've added onto deliverables for that. However, my sense is, despite the fact that, all of that has been done, can you give me a yay or a nay? Have the deliverables, whether they've been extended or not, been delivered? And if not, when were the courts advised, or have the courts been advised? Because if they have not, we this is a legal issue, I think, of my number one concern. Number two, I'm concerned about the biometrics. There's a whole issue around biometrics already. In fact, there is already a court case on biometrics and who's been registered, whether they be beneficiaries or whether they be recipients. The biometrics principally are done. Why are we redoing the system with Home Affairs? Are we not duplicating a system here? And are we not making our lives very, very difficult? Because if Home Affairs can only do this at night, when will this ever be done? I want to talk about bank cards. You talked about government printers doing the bank cards. Bank cards are generally done by banks. They have a UEPS system ingrained in this card, normally 2 UEPSs which talk to each other, and they have a data, this goodie, the silver goodie on this. I have never heard of a situation where a government printer can print a bank card with ingrained UEPSs and chips in it. I just, please give me clarity on that, because as far as I'm concerned, that a bank must do that. And we're talking about just over 9 million cards that need to be printed, an exercise that's going to take a minimum of 3 years. This obviously has not been started, so new cards obviously cannot be done until such time as those cards are printed, and that hasn't been started yet. So that's a couple of years in the offing. And lastly, and I'll come back because I have very, very many questions on this, I just need some, we've talked about moms and pops shops in rural areas, which really, really concerns me because of the challenges that are going to go around there. But in your strategic disintermediation, we are going from one service provider who's done everything to a whole chain of service providers to manage this on behalf of SASA when SASA takes that over. Because you've broken it down under every SLA. Now we've got banks, we've got CPPs, we've got Home Affairs, we've got PSPs, we've got different service providers for different things, where this was all being done under one. That is alarming, because that opens, we have a problem with deductions and corruption in the department already. And now we're going from one service provider to a string of service providers that is going to leave us very, very vulnerable. And I think that is a major, major concern. I will leave it there, Chair, and I will come back to the rest of the questions later.
No, I was trying to consult in terms of how are we going to finish your many questions. So I'm being orientated as to we will manage. So can I give to the department to answer? Others will come.
That's Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe I'm not going to answer questions in sequence, if that's okay, because there's policy legal issues and there's also operational issues. So if I can just start with some of the legal issues that have emerged, and then also allow SASSA to talk about the technical issues. I must admit, I've learned a new term, this intermediation as well. I wanted to actually know, is it the real word? in terms of the Concord process, and I think that's a good place to start. You know, the Concord did discharge the supervisory role after the first report to the Constitutional Court, and that obviously was based on certain timelines having to be met. The fact that we have not met those timelines means that we have to go back to the Concord, and the Concord is the supervisor. So that is where the supervisor is. So we'll have to go back to discuss the options and actually say this is where we're going to. These are some of the concerns we have. We can't go into all the nitty-gritty details here now, but we have to go back to the Concord with a report, and we need to do that quite soon. And I think that Rapasle Ramakgopa also tried to talk about those kind of issues. In terms of the other policy-related issue that was asked by, in relation to when we move into this new space, how do we ensure that deductions are not met? There we will be guided by the new regulations. So whether we go with the banking system, and we, as the presentation indicated, we are asking for a special account. And the special account will then be guided by those regulations. So initial discussions with Reserve Bank and the Payment Association and National Treasury, there's a sense that this new special account can be accommodated and guided by the regulations. So the regulations were designed to prevent the kind of illegal and immoral deductions that we've seen happening in the last few years. So, so whatever option we have will have to be guided by the regulations that the department sets in terms of managing the deductions. I think those are the kind of legal issues that we needed to respond to. Then the CEO, the operational issues, if you can deal with those.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. There was another question which was talking about the biometrics. If we have biometrics, why then are we going to dealing with Home Affairs? We collected biometrics through the RERAC. Now, the process that has been taken, that is still going on, is to verify the information that is sitting on that data, whether the people that are they with the Home Affairs. Ms. Ramakgopa did mention, or I think Sizotha did mention on the issue that we collected biometrics even for the kids from 3 years up to 14, which Home Affairs does not have. So Home Affairs in this case is getting information from our side to them, because they do have birth certificates, but they may not have the biometrics because the IDs have not been done through the fingers that we do from the age of 18 when we take the issue of biometrics. And the issue of card issuance, there was a mention, I think, from Mama Wilson on the issue of government. The bank cards. The cards, as we understand from Home Affairs and what is happening in GPW, those cards are not different from the bank cards. We may not see it. They're just like the white label cards. They do have a chip inside. Information that we have for our cards and biometrics are sitting on that card. That card can be swapped or can be touched into an instrument that can be able to do that. They can do it if that's the direction that we may end up taking in order for us to control the card issuance ourselves, so that we can have the kind of control over the card. We may go to the Home Affairs or GPW, but the options were there was an issue of the banks. The banks may be issuing the card, because all the cards that the banks have, They don't do them themselves. If you look in the cars themselves, you take the card, if I can take out mine, you look at the back, you'll find that it's done by Gemalto, it's done by another company in France, another company, all the cars that are there. They outsource it themselves, the banks. You get the card from the bank, but the card itself does not come from the bank. The chip itself is not created by the bank. It's created by the companies that is outsourced to them. All of them. All of them. Like I can tell Investec, that is mine. Mine is got Gemalto on it at the bank. I've got the Standard Bank card too. It's got Gemalto on it. So it tells you it's one company that is doing for the different banks. So when you look into that, that is something that I don't think it might be a problem in doing with GPW, because it's using the inside part of the card is outsourced from GPW themselves. Can I ask Ms. Ramakopa to take some few?
Who is the custodian of the biometrics in this country? Because if you do happen to produce your own, who must have it so that you access it for your own use? Thank you.
The home affairs in this country is the ultimate custodian of all the information of all the citizens, and people that are coming into the country, they are registered in there. Hence, we are verifying, not only us, including the banks. We've seen the banks themselves. They even issue the ID cards in the bank itself, on the new system, digital system that has been introduced. So it tells you that at the end of the day, the verification, everybody in the country will go right round, but they'll end up in Home Affairs. So Home Affairs is the custodian of the biometrics. The problem that we're talking about on our side is that the biometrics for the age 3 months to 14 has not been recorded with Home Affairs. So that's why we're in talks with Home Affairs in talking about how are we going to be getting this. So they're getting information from our side. They are going to verify it themselves in order to put it on the system. Then everybody in the country through our system, those that are within the 12 million that we have on the kids, those will be in the Home Affairs, but they would have been held by us going forward. Custodian, Home Affairs.
Thank you very much. I think I wanted to deal with the issue of the 7 deliverables, but I think Mr. Dango has already responded to it. The fact, what I just wanted to confirm is that not all of them have been achieved. And on the issue of who does the data sit with, the data, although it belongs to Social SASSA, the data belongs to SASSA, let me say. All the information that we have given or was captured as part and parcel of this contract belongs to SASSA, the beneficiary information. On the issue of have we asked the service provider, what are the challenges?
So your payment of the contract, servicing of the contract, it entails that whatever work they have done it on your behalf. It's because it belongs to you as SASSA. You must get that in.
The response is like that. We own the data and not the systems. And then on the question, have we asked the service provider what are the challenges that they have experienced in terms of implementation? I'm going to focus on the area of what are the lessons that we have learned directly before even interacting with the service provider. One was that there's always an issue or a requirement of balancing between the regulatory requirements and the aspiration of achieving a human rights-based mechanism. When we had to implement the biometrics, we've had to go and ask for a special dispensation from the Reserve Bank, because initially we assumed that this would be a general understanding that this is very important, especially for people who are suffering or people with some challenges in terms of literacy. And sometimes you take it that is an assumption is an understanding of all of us. But time and again, you'll find that you have some regulatory challenges that you have to deal with. We have had to deal with that. And this has happened also in the issue of deductions. where we felt that as a country, everyone understands the challenge that if you're giving the money for social grants, it's made for basic purposes, and therefore it cannot be allowed. But some of the institutions, even within the government framework, were coming to us to say, this is not possible. You are not. This cannot be done. You have to allow these people to participate because of the issues of financial inclusivity. Then, again, the other issue that we had to deal with was that there was there's always an assumption, or there is an understanding that SASSA previously, or the Department of Social Development, prior to even SASSA was established, cash used to be distributed in the form of vouchers or in the other form. But in this day and era, if we think that SASSA can be a paymaster, can we still be transferring cash to those areas that are remote? The truth of the matter is that when you start to analyze what the service provider or what are some of the complexities around cash management and cash distribution, there's issues of storage, there's issues of vaults, there's issues of security intelligence and the route intelligence, because if you're going to transport money, you have to understand the politics, you have to understand the criminality, and understand that you cannot use the same route every day, what route to take, and what are the challenges around that in order to ensure that money moves from one area to the other in a safe area and is moved into chunks. And therefore, it's one of those things that made us to understand that in as much as we want to be a cash paymaster, there are certain realities that they do not, some of the things do not belong to us, like the issue of financial security in terms of transportation. There's also a lot of assumptions that we made when we said people must participate in the national payment system. The interpretation of the sector was that if you are saying people must participate in the national payment system, it therefore you are opening all other options. Therefore, you cannot come and have an outcry when there's deduction. You can not have an outcry when people are making loans and whatever, because you are the one who said they need to participate, they need to be financial inclusivity. So from our side, we also had to learn lessons before we even go to the service provider. So that's things that I just needed to highlight.
Thank you so much, Chair. I will request the CIO to answer on the infrastructure side in terms of the rural area and how to expand.
Thank you. Pardon my voice, I've got a throat condition, but I hope I'll be able to answer audibly. Madam Chair, with regard to infrastructure, the SASSA is undergoing extensive infrastructure review, taking into account the volumes of processing that must be done during the insourcing. So as part of the infrastructure renewal program, we are buying a number of servers for storage purposes, but also for storage. But with regard to the point of sale systems, that will be part of our procurement roadmap and supply chain activities, where there is, if there is no information or there is no actual instrument to process the cards, that assessment is almost done, and we'll know as we roll out the implementation plan for payment at particular points that infrastructure is in place. As we speak now, we're also considering other infrastructure at the point of interaction with beneficiaries that we can leverage, not necessarily from the third parties, but even intergovernmentally. We'll give that a consideration. But the program to infrastructure renewal and upgrade is underway. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Chair. There was another question which was talking about the regulations coming forward. I think the DG tried to answer that. But it's safe to say that with the engagement that you have with the Reserve Bank, we have discussed this issue at length, hence the special account for SASSA beneficiaries. We wanted the special account for SASSA beneficiaries. Even if we go to the open architecture, we would want to have our regulations that have been introduced by the minister to be embedded onto the card, whether the card is on the bank side or is done through GPW or is done whoever provider that will be helping us going forward after the we have received the information from the banks. The regulations that we are putting on will be embedded on the card. No deductions, no loans. That's the stand and the position that the minister has put forward and the department has adopted. That's what we are going to be doing. Can I request then, Sizoto, to take the rest of the questions?
Chair, I'll start with the last ones and go to. The first one, it's on the disintegrating services, the way we have chopped them into those. The rationale for doing that is we needed to separate. There are some processes that we are insourcing, there are some processes that we are outsourcing, and there are those that we are co-sourcing. So we needed not to lump them, and we end up getting, shortchanging on some. So if you look at this slide, I think there's already an answer for the card body production and distribution. Even though they will be having a link with the bank that will be backing us up, we also need to have a direct relationship with whoever it is. The current state is we appointed a service provider who brought in Grindrod as a bank, who also brought in Fidelity Guard for security as part of the cash distribution, and MasterCard. SASSA doesn't have any relationship with those. So as and when there are issues that involve, so we have to talk through the service provider for intermediaries. So we wanted to be also involved and to start to talk to this. The other example that I can also give is the relationship with merchants. Currently, the service provider has a relationship with your Boxers, your Shoprite, your Pick and Pay. Mm-hmm. That relationship, it's between the current service provider and those merchants. When we have issues, either of long queues or our beneficiaries not being treated correctly, the merchants are quick to say, in fact, we don't have a relationship with you, we don't even know you. So we want to eliminate such, so that as and when we have, it will be dotted lines, on some it will be solid lines, but we need, in all the spaces where SASSA beneficiaries have to be serviced, we need to have that dotted or solid line relationship. The issue of card issuance. I've spoken to the fact that we have our own commissioners, and we have looked at the regulation and even discussed with both PASA and BASA that currently how we are doing the application process for. Chair and members. There's payment association. So for the payment association, it includes all service providers, including like your CPS. They are classified as payment association. They are playing into that space, but they don't necessarily are banks. So your Fidelity Guard, all those, they are members of PASA. And then BASA is Banking Association. So now the banks have also their association. I think those are the two acronyms that I've been using just interchangeably. So now in terms of SASSA, how we are doing the grant application process, I've indicated we also are commissioning.
the documents that are there. And we also take information relating to clients, like your addresses and all that. So that is part of the FICA, financial. So I cannot say it in full for now, but I'm just saying, so all this, we just did this so that things don't fall through the cracks. I think I can explain that. Then the moms and pops shop in rural areas, involving them as merchants. This one, we are not necessarily, it will depend on the strength of each and every service provider, because we have to put them through some rigorous testing. But for issuing of devices, like your point of sale devices, your mini ATMs within the shops themselves, we want to start to classify all these shops and look into their strengths, and whoever is our service provider in terms of either a bank, we be able to recommend that we have classified them, come with us, let's put them through that rigorous test. But here, we want also the very experience of the transaction being happening there. For starters, we can start looking into before the cash distribution itself. We can look into just the transaction using the point of sale devices and test and look into also the issue of the, now can we start rolling out and I think before we can come to cash, there's this second one where in terms of the directive coming from the social development, we also have to consider the health shops. And we are looking into, can we negotiate with some of the merchants into, as and when you transact using your card, can you have loyalty points? And those loyalty points should push you towards getting your basic commodities, being like your bread, milk, and whatever. And such, we can start to introduce to our merchants that are in the shops there. So this one, ma'am, it's work in progress. We won't start just with the cash distribution at a go, because learning from also what the current service provider underwent, when they started with the issue of the merchants, they used to advance cash to some of your moms and pops shops in different areas. And this time it was not even a small mom and pops shop. It was a spa, one of the big supermarkets, where when they wake up the following day, they had closed shop, they were not there. Then the money was gone. So we also have learned, we have lessons to learn from the current service provider on how to choose the merchants. If we need them to disperse cash, how it's going to be done, but we are not just to be able to be taking them without putting them through that rigorous test. I think the card issue, it has been answered, but what I can just assure honorable members and chair is that we will need a bank to back us up. So whatever that we do, we will be having a bank to back us up on all this. So the issue of your standards that are there for the EMVs, your MasterCard standards and all that, we have to comply to. So hence then, a bank as a partner, whether we opt for option A or option B, a bank as a partner, it's still a necessity for us. Even though the CEO touched on the issue of the Department of Home Affairs and the system and all that,
honorable members and chair, I can just indicate to you how the banks are currently doing. The banks currently are linked with Home Affairs on the web-based system. And you only authenticate once. After that, as and when you go there, they don't touch base with Home Affairs. They use their own system. You only authenticate once. They check once with Home Affairs. Once they know that, yes, this is Zoto, they have your biometric in their system. As and when I do repeat visits, it's within. It's within the system itself. So with this this time, for SASSA, we will be linking with Home Affairs on two ways. For the National Population Register, which we have said it's where we'll be doing the one-too-many search. But in terms of authenticating for who's the holder of the ID that is in front of us, that one, they can be able to take up the volume. But the volume that they won't be able to take up, it's when now we are just checking and corroborating on the biometrics that we have taken. That's the one that I've said it will be done over that. The supervisory role story, that has been covered. Chair, uma ubuze ukuthi, do we have infrastructure as USASA in rural areas? And will we be able to pay in terms of, do we have risk mitigating factors as and when funeka sibhadale? And what will we do should we find that abasebenzi bakaSASSA, they are also embroiled? What I can respond to on this one, asizubhadala thina singuSASSA. Still, we'll be using a service provider, whether we lay a bank that has a combination of both the card and the cash distribution, or just a company that is only coming on board just for cash distribution. So that one we will still be outsourcing, because I think Mem Ramakopa did indicate it has a number of dependencies: security for money, the vaults, the transportation, the intelligence that you need on the ground. So that one, really, it's not our space. Hence, even in the document that we have given to the Concord, we indicated this is not the space that we want to play into. Yes, the options do include a post bank, but post bank is classified as a bank. The fact that it's a government, 100% owned government bank, but it is classified as a bank because it does all the duties that a bank does. So when we have to negotiate and or procure, they will have to play into the space like any other service provider. That's how it has been classified. But when we talk of the post office, then the post office is being classified differently. The post office is classified like us as an agent. So we can be able to look into what is it that we can utilize and strike and some agreements with the post office as an agency. But then the bank component, it's classified differently when it comes to the procurement matters. What informed the timelines that were set in the court document? And I think this one, let me also club it with the fact that there are deliverables that have not been met, having set those timelines. And there was a rider that the honorable member did, was the fact that, yes, there's a sentence that indicated we were going to do consultations. Being aware of that,
but we then set those timelines. What informed the timelines? When we set the timelines, we were looking at the SASSA as an agency going to be ready at these at this given time that we have set for the timelines. But then when we started getting the advice from the stakeholders, including from the report that we got from the work streams, who are assisting us in different streams of in work streams, it then occurred to us we were overly ambitious on setting on some of the timelines. So hence then, we had to take their advice, break down some of the deliverables if you have done them, then disintegrate and start working on things that matter. Which one? I'm trying to look so that I don't skip any.
I wanted to remind you the one about.
I still have them, ma'am.
Okay,
I
sure.
Still have them. The communication strategy. Let me start up there.
Can I communicate with that member? Do you want to add this now, or do you want us to finish second round? Okay. Let me make this ruling that before the new ones, you will be taking through this, and then there will be another process. So we'll be rest assured.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to make a suggestion that the Portfolio Committee invites the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, the Post Office, and the Post Bank, so that you can have a clear understanding of what is going on in terms of the Post Bank and the Post Office. But also we want to stress that the Post Office has got a very large footprint. And if it was according to our wish, we would be working with them. But there are challenges that we can't talk about here. Let them talk about those challenges. But in as far as we are concerned, the Post Bank and the Post Office should be our priority. And then the second issue that I would like to talk to is the issue of community involvement in the whole process. Community shops. We have had looked into other countries. We've benchmarked, and we've seen how communities use the grant to ensure that money circulate within communities. What you see now is that 31 million is paid in Port Alfred, and you have thousands and thousands of grant recipients coming to get their grant. And then by the time they go back home, they have nothing. They leave their money there. Even transport is organized for them. And whatever we are going to do, we want to ensure that we follow proper prescripts so that we also have confidence in our people. Because if you have a problem of accountability and have doubts in communities, it means we are not going to be able to use the grant to develop our people. We are not going to be able to use the grant and transfer whatever we have to ordinary communities. And that's the whole reasoning behind the whole thing. One other issue that I would like to raise is that this is a project with a process, and it should be taken that way. And we want to try and ensure that we report whatever we have done, and also in some of the instances, we would like members of the committee to go and see practically what is happening on the ground, so that they understand what we are saying in terms of paying grants. And if contingency plans, yes, surely, at some stage, grants were paid cash, and all people got their money. But we are not saying we're going to go back there. We are going to ensure that our people get their money on the 1st of April. But we don't want to be pushed to say who is going to be paying money, because it looks as if there are other interests beside the interest of the human right of the grant recipient to get the grant. And I think also we would like Ulento UIT Wetu to give also a report, but also say we have sat down and we have agreed that we should go back to court and give a report on where we are and the challenges that we are facing in terms of the process. But also we've looked into government regulations and looked into what government regulations says about pressing emergency and issues that affect directly communities and issues that have to do with finances and human beings. So there we also have a we can develop our contingency plan around that. Thank you, Chairperson.
We still have the questions that will come. Now let's go back to the questions that now. In that
But I was first.
Oh, okay. I didn't write number.
He had the privilege.
My performance was poor in saying I attached your name to number one or number two. Continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe I should be privileged because I didn't have the first bite. Mm-hmm. This is the first chance for me to have a question. Chairperson, unfortunately, my question is exactly what the minister has just said, that who is going to pay the money is very important, it's very critical to the grant recipients, as I do my constituency work, because when it comes to the 31st of the 31st of March 2017, when the contract expires, people would want to know, South Africans would want to know, who is going to pay the grant to the recipient. That's a very important and a critical question that the entity needs to answer. Chairperson, coupled with that is the fact that I've listened to the responses that they've given. I'm satisfied with some of them. I'm not satisfied with some of them. But the second critical question is, are they ready to pay, to take on the function come the 1st of April? If that question is answered, Chairperson, because that is going to allow me to further ask some questions based on the answer that I'll be receiving on the issue that is SASSA ready to pay, to take on the service come the 1st of April 2017, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to go further because I really have my question are based on the answer that I would receive on that. I think the answer is very simple, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to preempt the answer for them. But whatever answer that they will be giving to me, then I will follow up my question because my questions are formulated based on the answer that they are going to give, Chair.
But you will appreciate that then I'll take other hands. They'll keep the question and answer at that stage. Can we do that?
Or should I perhaps go on a little bit further on that question?
Yeah, as long as I'm not going to open answers before others have asked questions.
Okay, Chairperson. Or perhaps are they anticipating to extend the contract with this current service provider, which we should also be on record to say with the understanding of the constitutional ruling, the current contract is invalid. Although there were terms that were put forward for it to after SASSA has made the presentation until the term of the current service provider expires. So are they perhaps going to anticipating to extend the contract of the current service provider? If they do that, what are the implications? Thank you, Chair.
My first bite. But it's my first bite. My first bite.
I see I'm surprised because I'm the only male in the portfolio committee.
Honourable Chair, I think I must preface my remaining questions with a comment. Look, Chair, we play an oversight role as members of this portfolio committee, and we are supposed to be fair, objective, and we need to be frank. In this regard, what do I mean? Chair, I've heard the project line or whatever presenting, giving reasons why some of the timelines were not met. And she's saying it's because at that time they were ambitious. Now for me, Chair, that kind of an explanation is unacceptable. It is not plausible. It can't stand the rigor of strategic management and strategic management change. So I'm sorry that can never be accepted. I regard it as an insult to us. Because if you are faced with such a mammoth task, you can't be wishy-washy. There can be no ambiguity. You must be strategic. You must plan thoroughly. That is project management. So for the member to come and say, yeah, that they were ambitious is unacceptable. If you fail to plan properly and thoroughly, in fact, you plan to fail spectacularly. That's the dictum, Chair. I thought I must emphasize that point because
When we are in the portfolio committee, we are attentive. We listen, we take notes. Thanks, Chair. Now, I want to come to the under the slide that was dealing with readiness and change. They are mentioning that the pilot period is June 2017. Now, what happens in the transition? What happens in that transition? Because if you talk June, you are we have missed the 1 April deadline. It's two more. What happens in that in the transition? Today is the 30th November. Tomorrow is the 1st December. December is a festive season. February, January is a festive season. Effectively, the department is having 1 month, which is February 2017, and the contract expires on the 31st. So, Chair, to come and say here today is work in progress. Work in progress is a broad phrase. It is open-ended, it is not specific, no timeline is general. So for me, Chair, it puts me in a tight manner, a tight spot as a member of the portfolio committee who must do its oversight. That we must deal at a concrete level with concrete facts. If you say open, I mean, work in progress. No, Chair, it's not fair for me. Okay, we understand that the transition must be seamless. And then now, Chair, I'm coming to the second one. I want that team to unpack, you know, the phrases that limit the risk. That's what the DG was talking about. Unpack what you mean by one of the options that limits the risk. Because for me, it's not an option. It's a mitigation. So unpack what you mean by that. Give us more details. Give us more specifics. I was going to ask a question around the post office, but I think there was a response. Safe to say the post office has 4,000 outlets in the country. And I think its footprint is good, but I think the minister has responded on that, so I will not ask the question on that one. So those will be the questions at this time, Chair, but I can't think we can afford to be general at a stage and talk about work in progress and ambitions. We must deal with concrete things. Thanks, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity.
Honorable Wilson, no, I'm coming. I'm just really going to cover everything.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mine is just a question, my very first question that wasn't answered. I'd like to know how well is the community informed and what method you've used. Thank you.
Okay, Mama Wilson.
Thank you, Chair. I must tell you, I'm seriously alarmed, and I support what my colleague, Honourable Mabila, was saying, because all we've heard about is work in progress, work in progress, work in progress. The whole point of this meeting was for this department to come, show us exactly where they were, what's been done, what hasn't been done, what needs to be done, and by when it will happen. We have seen nothing. In that regards, we've just got a lot of gumph and gumble about it's a work in progress, it's a project, it's a work in progress, it's a project. With no timelines, no nothing. My first concern, dealing with the Concord judgment, you've missed 5 deadlines already. 5 deadlines have been missed already, and you still have not gone back to the Concord to explain why. I find that unacceptable. That leaves you in contempt, surely. Surely that leaves you in contempt of the court. Why has this not been done? We're not dealing with Mickey Mouse here. We're dealing with a legal system, a constitutional court judgment.
Honorable member, are you going to be able to talk through the chair?
Sorry, Chair.
To a certain extent, thank
you. Thank you, Chair. Through you. We're dealing with a constitutional court judgment, Chair. We're not dealing with a Mickey Mouse. This is not a game. This is not a kid's playground. This is a legal institution who has delivered a judgment. 5 deliverables have not been yet, and we still have not been back to the Constitutional Court with a report. I find that horrendous. I find it unacceptable, and it leads to all sorts of questions on its own. This presentation is clear, Chair, that SASA is not ready to take over grant payments on their own on the 1st of April next year. Will SASA please confirm to us that CPS will be continuing with this contract until such time as SASA actually gets its act in order so that we know where we stand? Because as far as I'm concerned, that is the only option we have at the moment, and I'd like to confirm that those plans are in place. I'm very glad to hear that we have to have a banking partner. Yes, indeed you do, because you cannot do this without an FSB provider. We'd be curious to see which bank gets that facility. And I want to ask about the advisory committee. I'm going back to the managing lead's comment about being overly ambitious. Was this over-ambition, this advice given to you by the advisory committee that the minister herself appointed? And if so, are they still in place? Are they still, do we still have an advisory committee, or those advisory committee now workstream leaders? And how did this whole thing came about that we're overly ambitious? Because I don't accept overly ambitious either. I just want a clarification from the CEO, please, CEO. If our biometrics and the Home Affair biometrics do not tie into each other, in other words, we've got biometrics that they don't have and vice versa, does that jeopardize grant recipients? And I want to discuss the constitutional rights of South Africans with regards to what they do with their money, because at the end of the day, once that grant is paid over, it is the money of the grant recipient or the beneficiary. How do we constitutionally tell people what to do with their money? That they can't draw money from a bottle store, because they can't buy a sugary cool drink because it's not good for your health, that you can't do this with it, that you can't take out a loan, and if you do, it can't come off this account. It is their bank account at the end of the day where their money is transferred to. Please can you clarify for me what the constitutional right of South Africans is to make decisions about their lives and where we get to dictate it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just would like, I have two questions. The one goes back to the various service providers that were outlined in the presentation, where we are going to be issuing, in the options, we're going to be issuing a whole lot of RFIs and EOIs and all those I's. And just to find out, in comparison, with in terms of cost, having all these things been done by one service provider and being paid a certain cost, are those not going to be too costly to have all these SLAs and EOIs and all those things with all those service providers? But also I want to go back just to agree with some of the questions that have been asked by colleagues, to say that when this meeting today was set up, it sounded to me like we were going to get a plan that is presented of this is what we are going to do. And then we come here and we get what one could call it a wish list, because we still have options. We still have this, we still have the other. And I would like a confirmation from the department and the agency to say there is no plan as we sit here. This presentation was made out of a team that's working together on this work, but there actually is no document that you can call an institutionalization of the grant payment system by the South African Security Agency. That is what I would like to know. Because even the chairperson can agree with me that I, even in the last meeting of the 16th, asked for the plan, because that's where you get all these technical things, and then you can be in line with the department and the agency, and be able to read with understanding what is going on. So my question, Chair, is that can we have a plan, and also is it not costly to deal with the AEOIs and EFIs and all the IS? And also to ask if for me, it sounds like that we have work streams in the agency that are doing nothing but this thing. And then we have the agency that has got its human resources that are continuing with the work of the agency. But we still are stuck in a situation where we do not have a plan of how we are going to take over this work from the 1st of April 2017. I just would like a confirmation or an objection to that. Thank you.
Oh, now comes Honorable. Thanks, Chairperson. And I waited very patiently. Work has been done till now. What I would like to know is, because I don't think we heard it in, you know, previous meetings, the cost for the process thus far. What cost is attached to this process? Because money is being given out. So I would like us to speak to that. Then, when it comes to Treasury, we have our different work streams. Was money delegated from Treasury for our different work streams? I don't know whether the person speaks about money regulated or was money given. You know, I just want us to speak to those because we need funds for each of these work streams. So I just call it delegation because those are administrative things. And then what I'd like, there's a third question. I'm not going to ask the others yet. The phasing out and the phasing in. Just speak to us about that, that we could understand that concept. Thank you.
Also, I think I'm a member of this committee. At some stage, I must have a privilege of asking one or two questions. I just want to know, the minister suggested that we invite, amongst others, treasurers. Mm-hmm. And I'm triggered by that to begin to ask, any mammoth task like this one requires special funds to implement, whether that has been discussed with the Treasury, and where does Treasury stand? Because if you have to bring such expertise and all the things that you talk about, I think it's a special project. We needed some funds to do that. Also, I will also be happy to know whether taking over means that today we take everything, or taking over means that there is a way of bringing this on. So I want the team to assist me clarify this takeover. I really wanted to know exactly what does it mean. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll touch on a very few issues, and then the rest of the team is going to respond. Firstly, I must say that when we started with this process, the term of the past CEO came to an end, and I think that in itself contributed to the delay. And I know that we are going to say that's neither here nor there, but I think I should raise the matter. And then secondly, we have outlined our options. But I think now we are called upon to give a full account of our contingency plan here. And that has implications. It's going to put some at an advantage, but also it's going to put the work we are doing at risk. And therefore, with due respect, we don't want to risk the work we are doing. And that, thirdly, I really think that the grant recipients just want to know if they will be paid on the 1st of April. But secondly, we have never said we want to decide how the money is going to be used. But we can't come here and say we are not going, or we are going to allow people to use taxpayers' money. If we are concerned about taxpayers' monies, we must be concerned about people going to gamble with the grant money. We must be concerned about people going to buy liquor with grant money. And therefore saying that we have no control over the grant is not true. But also, social workers actually are supposed, in terms of a social work practice, are supposed to sit down with families and come up with a budget of the necessities of each and every grant recipient. Because, for instance, you have to ensure that children eat proper food. But also, you have to ensure that grant money is used correctly. But also, taking this whole thing to communities does not mean that communities or whoever will be having a shop will decide for the grant recipients about what they should buy. But what we have to ensure is that the taxpayers' money is used properly. Because, again, this money has to contribute towards human development. And then one other issue. Yes, post office has 4,000 outlets. I've asked the committee to invite the post office and post bank. But they've just closed 221 outlets. And I even raised that matter with them because I was shocked that they are closing these without even talking to us. But also, you know, if you work with us, there must be an agreement, because we don't want to hear that post office workers are on strike this month, 7 months, and therefore this whole thing causes a problem for the grant recipients. Now, also the issue of court. Yes, we were given timelines. We were given 7 areas of importance. And because we have redefined the areas and the timelines, that in itself says we must go and report back and say Yes, we are following the 7 timelines, but for them to be effective, this is what you need to add in the whole thing. But also, this is not of contempt of courts. Now it sounds as if this is a contempt of court. It's not. I thought I should raise those issues and then allow the officials to make a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I think
thank you, Honorable Hope. I think I must really make a follow-up question because I need to go to another meeting of Arts and Culture where we are adopting a report, Honorable Hope. But then I just want to come on the issue that we are a constitutional structure here. We are a portfolio committee of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. To say that when we request information, that we are putting the work of the department at risk, to me, I really find it unacceptable. Unless the information, the information that we requested, Chairperson, from the beginning, is the information that is highly classified. And in my understanding, the information that we requested from the department to provide to us, it's not an information that is highly classified. Would really want to exercise our oversight freely, because the same budget that is going to be used to implement the same system, we are the ones that sit and appropriate for that budget. And it is our responsibility, therefore, to ask questions, whether the questions are going to sit well with the people that we are asking questions to, but umsebenzi wethu ukubuza imibuzo bathi abantu. That's what we do. Udla ngokutsho Chairperson, our work is to the work bathi abantu. Bathini abantu? Then abantu loo nto bayithethayo sibuzela lobona, because we are public representative. We do not represent ourselves, Chairperson. So information that we need, I think even from the beginning, we said the department should provide us with the progress report on how far. But when you look at the presentation does not. It's far from what we requested as a portfolio committee. Because we wouldn't request that if we were 100% sure that all is well. At the same time, we are not saying all is not well. But we wanted the department to come forth and alleviate fears that were there outside, because there were a lot of things that were said in different newspapers about the institutionalization of the grant system. But now they are not helping us. That is why we will have a lot of questions that might not be comfortable to some people, but unfortunately, Chairperson, we will have to ask those questions. Before I leave, Chairperson, I really wanted to know the answer on that one, the readiness, whether on the first, because this is the last time I'm sure the Portfolio Committee is meeting for this year, and we are going to the constituency way. We must never underestimate that people out there do not know what is happening. Unfortunately, South Africans now, social media and all the types of media are everywhere. They already know what is happening, that SAFA is institutionalizing from the first. What then? What do I tell my constituencies when I go to my constituencies? I need to take off their fears that everything is going to be well. You still receive your grant, whatever grant system that they are under. Because the question is, what is going to happen? So please, can we be assisted with that? Can we be assisted with information so that when we go to our constituencies, we are able to answer those questions on behalf of the department, because that's the work that we are doing. Bathi abantu, Enkosi Chairperson.
If there was a speaker that was to come, I'm not intending to suppress,
but I think the department must quickly respond directly to specific issues as articulated.
Thank you, Chair. When we started the discussion earlier this morning, I think what we said was there are options on the table, and from the department, the option that we're saying is that what needs to happen by 1st of April, that whatever option is utilized, grants must be paid. But within those options, we're also very aware of the fact that there are legal issues. One of those is the existing contract, which is invalid. And the invalidity is suspended until the end of the contract term, which is the 31st of March. We have commissioned three legal reports, because not only are we dealing with a legal minefield, but we're also dealing with a very litigious partner. And so the essential guiding fact is that if the contract is invalid, you cannot extend an invalid contract. If you do need to extend it, even for phase in and phase out, we've got various measures within even a short time frame of what the legal measures are that we need to follow. I can't spell those out now. But essentially, if one looks at those two options and the question about will we be able to pay, if one just takes option one, we will be able to use option one and pay the grant on the 1st of April. We may not have all the issues in place, but grants will be paid. But that is asking us to go into details that will, in a very public forum, talk about contracting, and I think I'm just uncomfortable doing that. But just to say that we're very aware of the legal issues that and the risk of attendant to an invalid contract and an invalidity ruling that comes from the highest court in the land, and I think we must be very aware of that. And when you talk about the question about phase in and phase out, even in those issues, the Constitutional Court ruled also that the current service provider is in fact by de facto taking over this function an agent of the state. And there's some rules around contracting that compels them to participate in any phase out process. But that's also be subject to a negotiation. I don't think we want to engage in a public space. And it's not disrespecting the space, it's just that there are many players within this. We are working very closely with the Reserve Bank. In fact, the Reserve Bank has given us a resource to work through this. We're working very closely with National Treasury. They've given us a resource as we traverse this journey. So I think the what we can say is that we are committed to paying that grant on the 1st of April, but also to comply with the legal prescripts and the way that we are bounded by the way the court has ruled. Therefore, the three very extensive legal opinions that we have had. The issue, I think, I just want to just talk about the rules, the regulations that are currently being contested by financial service providers in court. So the minister passed new regulations to stop what we call either illegal or immoral deductions from people's grants. Mm-hmm. And some of the friends of the court included the Human Rights Commission, Black Sash and others, because essentially, if one looks at the Garnishi Order case, what was found was that poor people's money is their asset, and immoral deductions, either through Garnishi orders for loans that they should not have been made in the first place, is asset stripping. So the regulations seek to deal with that, Chair. So I think we have got a role to play within that, and it's an important issue because the question was asked, Chair. It's an important issue because any option that we take, whether it's through the national payment system, those issues will be built into the bank account. That's why we talked about a special bank account. And the fact is the Reserve Bank and the major players have said that this is possible, they can do it, and they will be able to open these kind of accounts within and providing the guidance that the regulations seek to protect.
I'm trying to wind this meeting towards its closure, but with the interest, a very serious interest in terms of the concrete experiential learning of the activities that took place with the current service provider. I do not know, because the portfolio committee has not set and decide issues as to whether they must be appointed. They were appointed in the process. I mean, the current service provider. And also, I do not think that it is the role of this committee to say they must not be appointed. That what we will deal with is a report that will be saying to us, this service provider is being appointed. And then we'll take the issue as to why, because of ABC. But I don't think we should come and anticipate to say, are you not going to, I don't think we're supposed to be exactly saying who must be appointed, but we will be dealing with the product that will be brought to us to say we are appointing. If I had a very bad DG, and then the term of that, the contract of the DG is moving towards the termination, I mean, end or expiry, would I really say, this DG must not apply? Or would I open the advert, he applies, she applies, then I don't take, goes into the master list when I do my selection, because I know these issues, I don't even put them in that. And then if I'm legally challenged, I'm able to say, because of the performance, I was not able to put this person. Because I think we all agree. We said the department must come and produce a progress report. We didn't say we must come. No, that's what I know. That's what is in the minutes. That's what is in the minutes. I fail to understand then to say what is your final product. All we wanted to check was the state of readiness towards that. For me, it was never a matter that says, let's receive today a complete product and the challenges thereof. And I thought we were dealing with that. But at the same time, I'm not in any way going to endorse whatever delays that they might be there, because we still need to know why the delays and why were we not continuously kept informed, so that our own aspirations, that definitely the department that we are oversighting is about to achieve the set goal. But I also then would want us to say the report in terms of Mama U, Honorable Masango, is not in a technical format that seeks to say to us the timeline is saying human resource ICT will have not achieved this goal, so that we are in a position to put a measure, and then we say distributing money and so on will not insource it, then we know what then will be the gap, stop gap. And I do want to say, therefore, why don't we ask the department to bring us that narrative? The information was there, but it was indeed, I agree, scattered all over. It did not specifically put timelines, Zodwa, to say this, or in fact, let's go to April. I know the department has said in this meeting they will be going to the court to explain their predicaments. And therefore, the court will give its ruling or its advice or its instruction to them when they are there. This is what is going to be our consumption. To say, now the court, because we don't instruct them to do what, but we are oversighting what the court and them are doing. Ours is to ensure that what the court decides must be complied to. So I am now in a honorable members. I'm trying to wind up, and to not to have a meeting that is left with untied loops out there. To say the department must prepare a document that is clear that this is our plan in response to whatever the court has said, has instructed. And then if we have that plan, it must clearly articulate clearly the timelines that this will have happened, and the challenges that are there must be outlined in writing so that we are in a position to know how to address those, so that we can be able to get our own way of going forward. But Honorable Mabilo, I was actually saying when you were out, I don't remember us saying we will want a finished product in the minutes that we have. We wanted to have a progress report. A progress, this is what I can confirm is in our minutes. And I can, even the last meeting, and when I even met Omamo Masango and Omamo Wilson, that's what we had agreed when they were complaining that we had other meeting instead of another in terms of the program or agenda. And we agreed that I didn't feel we were saying bring a finished product. But I'm therefore saying, in the event of the activities today, let's be very specific then to say, can they go and bring a clear plan as well as time frames so that we can work from that step? I want us to end like that. And also, I've said, even if the current service provider is not supposed to be extended, it's clear it's not supposed, but I don't think we come here and say don't do that, because they have not come to us and say these are the people that we are proposing. If I was going to appoint, I mean, I was having a bad DG, I wouldn't say to him don't apply. I wouldn't wait, and I'm sorry to make such a bad example, but when the advert is there, they can put their names. But I do know my experience with them, and therefore they won't be shortlisted. And if they take me to court, I'll be able to say, but you know, these are the weaknesses. You never did this and this, so you don't qualify to be a competitor anymore. So, but I wouldn't wish the portfolio committee to preempt that, because these people are really, they like to go to court nowadays for even for everything. If there is no negotiation, there is no explanation, there are no questions, people are, let's wait until we get these people that are being recommended to do whatever, and then we can object and object fully. That this one can't be here. This one, but we are not the people who actually blacklist in this portfolio committee. I just wanted to make those clarifications to be there. And thanking everybody, including the media. I think I want to say the media is very much welcome, because we are dealing here with issues that actually have effect on the rich and on the poor and everybody. So if you have an interest in this matter, we're very open so that people out there can even know that there are people who care, who challenge issues that affect them. So I thank you very, I mean, honestly, I'm not whitewashing here. I'm saying it was good you came, and people will know that even the media wants their rights to be protected in this country and the constitution upheld. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.